In this session, we shall look at gilts and QCBs. A QCB is a qualifying corporate bond. A QCB is a type of security. You will also see these referred to as types of loan stock. If an individual invests money into a company, he will either be buying shares or some sort of loan stock, that is, securities. If the investor acquires shares in the company, he has a stake in the company and a say in how the company is run. In return for his investment, the shareholder will receive dividends and rights to vote at shareholder meetings. The investor is simply lending money to the company, and this money will be paid back at a future date. If a company issues a QCB to an investor, the company will pay the investor interest on the loan as opposed to dividends. Many debentures issued by companies satisfy the definition of a qualifying corporate bond. The attraction of loan stock or debentures is that they are less risky than holding shares. The share price is far more likely to fluctuate than the value of the stock or debenture. The disadvantage of holding loan stock is that there is less opportunity to make a substantial profit, and the stockholder usually has no voting rights. For loan stock to satisfy the definition of a QCB, it must satisfy three conditions. The stock must have been issued after March 1984. Most importantly, the loan stock must be expressed in sterling and cannot be converted into any other currency. If the terms of the loan are expressed in such a way that the security can be converted into another currency, it will not satisfy the definition of a QCB. Finally, it is worth mentioning here that when a UK company pays interest on loan stock to its investors, it will withhold 20% tax at source. The investor will therefore receive the interest net of tax. Let us now take a look at gilts. Gilts, or gilt-edged securities, are so called because the edge of the certificate used to be embossed with gold leaf. A gilt-edged security is another example of loan stock, but this time the stock is issued by the government rather than by a company. Examples of gilt-edged securities are UK government treasury stock, exchequer stock, or 3.5% war loan. All gilt-edged securities will be denominated in sterling and are non-convertible. Gilts carry a fixed rate of interest from the date of acquisition through until the date of redemption. For example, if a taxpayer acquires 8% Treasury stock 2013, he has lent the money to the government on which they will pay interest at a fixed rate of 8% per annum until the loan is repaid by the government in 2013. Because an investor is lending money to the UK government, this is an extremely safe investment, and for this reason, gilts are quite popular. Interest on gilts is generally paid to investors every 6 months. As we looked at in the bank interest session in the personal tax course, interest paid on gilts is paid gross. Having defined gilts and QCBs, let us now examine the capital gains treatment of these particular assets. Gilts and qualifying corporate bonds are exempt assets for CGT. Therefore, if a taxpayer sells a gilt or QCB and makes a profit, the gain will not be charged to tax. Similarly, losses on gilts and QCBs are not allowable. These rules only apply for individuals. They do not apply for companies. If a company sells a gilt or QCB and makes a profit or loss, the resulting profit or loss is dealt with under the loan relationship rules. If a security does not satisfy the definition of a QCB, it is a chargeable asset for CGT purposes. For instance, loan stock or debentures issued by a company which are expressed in US dollars are not QCBs. Remember, QCBs must be denominated in sterling and are not convertible. If an investor holds a non-QCB, we treat this in exactly the same way as a share for capital gains tax purposes. The same pooling and matching rules will apply, and any gains will be chargeable and any losses allowable. There are anti-avoidance rules to prevent a company converting a non-QCB into a qualifying corporate bond or vice versa. If a non-QCB converts to a qualifying corporate bond, we pretend that the non-QCB, i.e. the shares, have been disposed of at their market value at the date of conversion. This produces a capital gain. This gain is not charged to tax immediately, but is instead brought into charge when the QCB is eventually sold. This rule was introduced as an anti-avoidance provision in 1997 to prevent taxpayers from converting what were essentially shares into QCBs in order to take advantage of the CGT exemption. Where you are perhaps most likely to come across QCBs in the course of your work is when a QCB is offered by a company as part of the consideration on a takeover. So, as well as offering new shares and cash for the vendor's old shares, the issuing company also offers loan stock, which satisfies the definition of a QCB. By way of an example, let us take a taxpayer who owns shares in Old Limited. Old Limited is taken over by NewCo PLC. NewCo PLC offers the shareholder cash plus shares in NewCo PLC in exchange for the Old Limited shares. As part of the consideration, NewCo PLC also offer loan stock in NewCo PLC. This loan stock, this IOU, satisfies the definition of a qualifying corporate bond. We have to consider how each element of the consideration shall be treated for CGT purposes. Because the shareholder has received part of his consideration in cash, a chargeable gain will arise, calculated using the part disposal rules. The share-for-share exchange will not give rise to a disposal for CGT purposes, so no gain will arise. However, the share-for-share exchange rules cannot apply to the QCB for the simple reason that a qualifying corporate bond is not a share for CGT purposes. On the receipt of a QCB on takeover, we assume that what the shareholder has received is an amount of cash equal to the value of the QCB. We therefore calculate the capital gain that would have arisen on the receipt of this pretend cash. However, because the shareholder does not physically have the cash in his possession, we do not charge this gain immediately. Instead, we freeze it. This frozen gain is eventually charged to tax when the shareholder disposes of his QCB at some time in the future. If the investor sells part of his QCB, only part of the frozen gain becomes taxable. Let us illustrate this by way of an example. Here we have a taxpayer called Michael, who owns shares in a company called Mike Limited. Michael bought 1,000 shares in January 2006 for £30,000. In November 2010, Mike Limited is taken over by Giant PLC. The terms of the takeover are that Michael will receive total consideration of £150,000 split as follows. Michael receives 1,000 new shares in Giant PLC. These shares are worth £100,000. Michael also receives £10,000 of loan stock in Giant PLC. This loan stock has a market value of £15,000. This may seem a little strange at first sight, but you should bear in mind that £10,000 of loan stock is not necessarily worth £10,000. Here it is worth more. The £10,000 is what we call the nominal value of the stock, i.e., this is the amount on which interest is calculated. Loan stock could be worth more or less than its nominal value, depending on interest rates and on the strength of the company. The remainder of the consideration, that is £35,000, is made up of cash. If we add these together, you will see that Michael has sold his shares for a total of £150,000, which is made up of three different assets. What we need to calculate is the capital gains arising at the point of takeover. Because part of the consideration has been paid in cash, a chargeable gain will arise on the cash element. To calculate the gain, we use the part disposal rules. Part of Michael's consideration has also been paid in the form of a QCB. Here we will calculate the gain by pretending that the £15,000 of loan stock received is in fact cash. This gain will then be frozen until the QCB is eventually sold. We will start with the calculation of the gain on the actual cash received. Cash proceeds are £35,000. As we are using the part disposal rules, we will take the acquisition cost of Michael's original shares and multiply this by A over A plus B. The shares originally cost £30,000. As the cash makes up £35,000 out of total consideration of £150,000, the allowable base cost is £7,000. Michael's gain is therefore £28,000. Lastly here, we calculate the gain on the receipt of the QCB. Remember, we pretend that the QCB is cash in order to calculate the gain. The proceeds are the market value of the loan stock at the date of the takeover, being £15,000. Again, we take the original acquisition cost of the shares and multiply by the part disposal fraction. The part disposal fraction is £15,000 over £150,000, i.e. the value of the QCBs received over the total consideration received. The allowable base cost is therefore £3,000. The gain is therefore £12,000. This is the gain that would have arisen if the £15,000 of QCB had actually been cash. This gain of £12,000 is then frozen. The gain will unfreeze, it will crystallise, when the QCB is eventually sold. Let us examine how this works. Assume that in July 2011, Michael sells half of his loan stock for £18,000 to an unconnected third party. As Michael is disposing of half of his QCBs, he will crystallise half of the frozen gain in the year in which the QCBs are sold, in this case, in 2011-12. The frozen gain in November 2010 was £12,000. As half of the loan stock is being sold, half of the gain crystallises. Michael, therefore, has a gain of £6,000 in 2011-12. As the QCB itself is an exempt asset, the sale of the QCB will not give rise to a chargeable gain or an allowable loss, so the proceeds figure of £18,000 in this example is irrelevant. Next, we'll consider a few practical points with regard to QCBs. The issuing company often prefer to include QCBs as part of the takeover consideration, as this means they do not have to find the cash to pay to the shareholder. Paying the vendor in the form of a QCB simply means that money is being left outstanding by way of a loan. As far as the vendor shareholder is concerned, if he takes QCBs instead of cash, he will not pay capital gains tax until such time as he sells the QCB. Taking loan stock on a takeover is therefore a way in which the vendor can defer a capital gain. If a vendor has a frozen gain on the receipt of a QCB, it is perfectly acceptable tax planning for the vendor to dispose of a small part of his QCB each tax year in order to crystallise a gain equal to the annual exemption. If the taxpayer has no other disposals and therefore does not utilise his annual exemption year on year, by redeeming his QCBs in regular small amounts, he can turn the loan notes into cash without having to pay capital gains tax. There are, however, a couple of downsides to a vendor accepting QCBs instead of cash. If the acquiring company, i.e. the new co, goes into liquidation, it is highly likely that it will be unable to repay the loan to the investors, and as such, the QCBs will become worthless. When the company is liquidated, the investors are deemed to have disposed of their QCB. As the QCBs themselves are exempt assets, any losses incurred on the redemption of the QCBs will not be allowable. However, when the QCBs are disposed of on liquidation, the gain which was frozen on takeover becomes a chargeable gain. The investor therefore has the problem that he or she has a chargeable gain, but may well have no cash to pay the capital gains tax. This problem has come to light in many instances. One way around this problem is for the investor to give his loan notes to a charity. Gifts of assets to charities do not give rise to a CGT charge, and the revenue has confirmed that such a disposal will not crystallise the frozen gain.